Hey guys, Mike here for Hokie Hangover on behalf of the good folks over at Main Street Pharmacy. Former Downtown Blacksburg Business of the Year in 2019, Jeremy Counts and his staff at Main Street Pharmacy have you covered for all of your pharmaceutical needs. Medication, school supplies, you name it. Jeremy and his staff, family-owned business, they got you covered over at Main Street Pharmacy in downtown Blacksburg. They've been a sponsor of our podcast since the beginning, going on 5 years now, and there's a reason why. They're extremely, extremely reliable. They're good people. They're friends of ours, friends of the podcast. Head on over to Main Street Pharmacy, 301 South Main Street, downtown Blacksburg. Open Monday to Friday, 9 to 6, Saturday from 9 to noon. They're closed on Sundays. You can be reached at 540-605-7721. That's Main Street Pharmacy, 301 South Main Street in downtown Blacksburg.
Hokie Hangover is proud to be sponsored by Homefield, the premium collegiate apparel brand in the United States. Based in Indianapolis, Homefield is committed to creating comfortable and officially licensed apparel featuring vintage college designs. Homefield puts in extra reps for each of the more than 150 colleges they highlight, discovering unique logos, mascots, and iconic moments to create the best look at your tailgate. Go to homefieldapparel.com and use the promo code BEAMERBALL to get 15% off your first order. Homefield makes online shopping so easy, even I can't screw it up. Again, use the promo code BEAMERBALL to get 15% off your first order and acquire blue chip apparel from Homefield, an official sponsor of Hokie Hangover.
Hangover. It's been about a week and a half, Ricky. It's you and I once again. Andrew is back on the West Coast. We were trying to record last week. I got incredibly tired two different nights and then tried to record last night. Didn't work out for me for not feeling particularly well. I'm feeling better today. But Andrew was traveling, so he's out west. It's you and I once again. Andrew will be back more regularly after the Super Bowl. He warned us that he was in work hell travel-wise for about 6 weeks right after Christmas. So he's right on schedule with that.
Well, see, here's the thing, though. If Andrew's not careful, he's going to be replaced by my dog on this podcast.
Yeah, your dog is making an appearance here on the podcast, Ricky. And we don't do this in video form yet. That's something I think we're probably going to add before the start of the football season. But tell us about the dog that is currently on your lap, at least I can see.
Yes, he is on my lap. His name is Bo, B-E-A-U. He's from Louisiana. We were fortunate enough to get him last week and do like a home visit for a week, and we made it official on Sunday. So he is officially ours. Bo LeBlue, ladies and gentlemen.
That's nice. That rolls off the tongue too.
Yes,
he is really freaking cute.
He is super clingy. Like Mike noticed, he is sitting on my lap at the moment. And once my girlfriend gets home from her work meeting, I have a feeling he's going to jump off my lap and go assault her.
Yes. So. That's
and by assault her, I mean jump on her until she bats it.
That's basically what happens. Dogs are your best friend until
you leave them for a couple hours.
That's right. Beautiful. We're going to talk about the men's basketball team. The women's team is kind of cruising right along. They just won a huge game this weekend against North Carolina on the road in overtime.
Yeah.
I watched a decent amount of it. They were the better team throughout. This was Sunday afternoon. They were the better team throughout the game and really just could not put Carolina away, and then did so in overtime. Georgia Amor was incredible, as she tends to be. Liz Kittley, really good once again. Hokies have a huge game, the ladies team, on Thursday on the road in Raleigh against NC State, a top five NC State team that Virginia Tech hung on to beat in Castle earlier this season. It's one of the marquee games once again of the season in the ACC, an ACC that is absolutely loaded on the women's side. Can't say the same at the men's side. But I don't mean to brush over the women's team. I'm not trying to brush over them, but we know where they're going to be. They're going to be a three seed or better in the tournament. They have a great chance of winning the ACC. They're going to be fine. Like they're good. They're good. They're right on schedule. You know, their role players are coming along and playing well, certainly. And of course, Liz Kitley and Georgia Amore continuing to run the show. So they are in excellent shape. Men's team, on the other hand, Ricky, started playing some pretty decent basketball over like a 4 or 5 game stretch. And then they had a really important 2-game series here. One game against Duke last Monday, right after we last recorded, actually. And then another game against Miami this past Saturday. And Virginia Tech led for a good bit of that game against Miami and had a couple of really unfortunate turnovers late. They missed a bunch of free throws, which has been extremely uncharacteristic of this team. They're second in the country in free throw percentage still, even after Saturday. They're very good at the free throw line. Couldn't make free throw. And going back to the game against Duke real quick, like Virginia Tech offensively, I thought was pretty good in that game. Defensively, just okay. And the problem is Duke, you know, you're really hoping that Duke just misses threes in Castle, and they just didn't do that. They made everything they looked at from three. Virginia Tech missed almost everything they looked at from three.
I was going to say, I think that to me was equally as important, is that
right?
In order to beat a team like Duke or even like Miami, you're going to have to hit a fair amount of your shots, and you're going to have to hit them at a higher clip than normal, right?
Yeah.
Because you got to cover that gap somewhere. And while Virginia Tech is usually pretty good from the free throw line in terms of efficiency, they don't get to the line a ton. And that comes from really having only one guy who can penetrate the defense consistently, and that's Padula, obviously. So we looked at the Duke game, we looked at the Miami game, and we were like, all right, they
split.
Really should, they have to try and get one of these.
Yeah.
If they get one of them, you feel like there's a reasonable chance that they can win enough games down the stretch. What, there's 9 left?
Yep.
And that they can win enough down the stretch in order to have a resume that's pretty good for the bubble. Not guaranteed, right? Virginia Tech wasn't going to be able to lock themselves in, but a resume that would be certainly respectable, right? And be looked upon favorably when it comes time for Selection Sunday. But you go in 2 in that stretch. You miss a lot of shots. You turn the ball over way too much in the second half against Miami. You go 0-2 in that stretch. All the same issues that have plagued this team for really the whole season cropped up in these 2 games. And you end up with 2 losses. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I feel like I'm beating a dead horse on this team, in the sense that this is a make or miss team, guys. Like I can't express it more simply than that, right? Like
the dog agrees. Bo agrees.
Yes, Bo agrees. If Tech makes their shots at a high clip, they're gonna win. But more importantly, if they don't make those shots at a high clip, they're not good enough in the other areas of the game in order to make up that difference. They don't get to the line enough. They're not good enough on the glass. They don't play really good defense. And they turn the ball over too much. So you put all that together and you end up with a situation where Virginia Tech's got one path to win the game, right? And that's just not going to cut it against higher level competition, because you're generally playing defenses that are much better, right? Like you're going to have those shots be contested more. And if you don't hit those shots at a high clip, right, you don't make 10 plus threes in a game, and you're going to find yourself, you know, trailing at the end of these games in the last couple of minutes every time. So it's the same problems. And unfortunately, the solution's not on the roster. And like the season's not over. Right, like I'm not gonna call it over. We all
made
saw
this
what
mistake.
This team did in February, and
you and I in particular made this mistake 2 years ago.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
You and I,
and
hand
but I'm
up.
Also not gonna sit here and like say it's like people shouldn't panic,
right? Because I do think Tech's postseason future is in trouble. And it's going to take a similar turnaround, like a similar magic, if you will, of this team really hitting shots and being a bit more efficient, especially with the footwork, especially with the basketball. If they're going to win the 8, maybe even 9 games down the stretch here that they're going to have to win. Anything short of 7 or 8 wins and you're probably toast. You win like 7+, and all of a sudden you maybe get yourself in a position where maybe one of those wins is against North Carolina, which, again, not likely, but, you know, the crazier things have happened. It's going to take that kind of stuff in order to make the tournament at this point.
Yeah, the margin for error, I think, for this team kind of went away in the preseason when Rodney Rice was gone from the roster. Because what ends up happening there is, like, and I don't necessarily subscribe to the fact that, like, or this idea, I guess, that Rodney Rice was going to come in and be like an automatic 15-point scorer, like some fans think he was. All Virginia Tech needed out of Rodney Rice was to score like 7 to 10 points per game and just like
take
some of the load off
of Padula.
That's it.
Honestly,
that's literally it. And like Padula's usage rate, people like to love to complain about Sean Padula's turnovers. And I understand, like, I get it. Right. He had 7 of them against Miami, 2 of them really, really consequential down the stretch. I understand. Like, I get it. But listen, like, Padula's numbers this season, like what he's doing with the level of usage, like, Ricky, Tech fans want to run this guy. You know, some Tech fans after the game against Miami want to run this guy off. He's the only reason why they're even remotely competitive right now. I mean,
if you were to replace Padula with a replacement point guard,
dude,
this offense would be in a box every night.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, he is the only real catalyst on this roster. Like we brought this up at the beginning of the year. We talked about how Virginia Tech does not have enough shot creators on the roster. MJ Collins is not much of a shot creator. He can hit shots, but he's not going to be creating his own shot very often. Hunter Couture is in the same boat, right? Mm-hmm. Let's call a spade a spade.
He's a shot maker.
And the same thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the same thing goes for Tyler Nickel, right? Another guy that needs someone to help him create that offense. Lynn Kidd is not a guy who can get his own shot off in the post efficiently. So you have to take that into account. All of those things are really coming together as to why Virginia Tech is struggling so much.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt about it. They're in a spot too where, like I get, okay, Saturday against Miami, you don't have Rex Steiner, right?
Yeah.
So you don't have Rex Steiner against Miami. That's tough. He's out
but
sick.
But even when they have had Rex Steiner, they haven't played him a ton.
But they haven't played him. So that,
how much of an impact does it really have?
So, okay, so you're making my point for me, right? So, like, I want to tie this into the 2021 run, right? Because we're talking about, like, what Virginia Tech needs to do over the next 9 games to put themselves back in position to have a shot, right? And I think the key thing I think of with 2021 and the reason why Virginia Tech had the success that they had late in the year in 2021 is because there were 2 young guys in particular that came along and started playing more minutes and started helping the rotation guys and taking a little bit of a load off of the starters who were playing like 30, 35 minutes a night. Sean Padula and Darius Maddox, right?
Yep.
And around this time, 2 years ago, Ricky, you and I and Andrew were talking about what does this team need to do to take some pressure off of the starting rotation players that are playing major minutes. These young guys need to start coming along, right? And Padula and Maddox did that late in the year. Obviously, Maddox had the shot in the ACC tournament against Georgia Tech, I believe. Georgia Tech or Clemson? I think Clemson, sorry. He hit the shot against Clemson.
Yeah, it's been too long, man. He
hit the shot against Clemson to keep Virginia Tech alive in the ACC tournament. Hokies advance. We all know what happened after that. Everybody likes to talk about how that was a one weekend team, and it really wasn't. Like, that team won 8 of its last 9 games in the regular season, something that you know, I think that they would love to do this year to put themselves in position.
Yeah.
But it was because they had some of the younger guys come along. And I think what needs to happen here down the stretch is, number one, it's really important that they're getting a week off here, right? They played that game Saturday against Miami. They're getting a full week off to, number one, rest a little bit. But number two, maybe try to bring some of these guys along and try to figure out something with the rotation, right? Mekhi Long will hopefully be back. He's missed the last four or five games at this point with a knee injury. He was significant. You talked about the rebounding issues that Virginia Tech had. Mekhi Long is one of Virginia Tech's best rebounders. He hasn't been in the lineup. He is a catalyst to the offense in terms of getting out on the fast break when he's in the game and pushing the pace, pushing the tempo. I think that's something that's been missing. So Tech's missed that without him in the lineup. So you hope to get him back. But more importantly, like, you hope that guys like Rex Steiner and maybe Jaden Young in a pinch, you know, can start playing, like, I don't know, 8, 10, 12 minutes a night. Nothing crazy, but just take some of the load off of Padula and Katori in particular, because those two guys are playing 37, 38 minutes a game. And this is the time in conference play where that starts to wear on you. And I'm not trying to excuse Padula for his turnover issues by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think there is a lot put on him. Mike Young, before the season, said on a podcast on Tech Sideline that it was inexcusable in terms of, like, what Virginia Tech had to do with Padula last year as far as, like, the pressure that was put on him to carry the offense. And unfortunately, when Rodney Rice departed, Virginia Tech was kind of in a similar situation unless a guy like Rex Steiner came along. I think Rex Steiner's been fine when he's played for the most part, but I mean, Mike Young is clearly not comfortable with putting him in for long stretches of the game. That and the fact that you have to have Sean Padula on the floor makes it tough. But this is a team right now that, from a resume standpoint, has not had a bad loss yet, Ricky. Like, you look at the NCAA net, and that's the key difference, I think, from a couple years ago. Virginia Tech had a few really bad losses, right? They had a tough non-conference schedule, and they had a couple of really bad losses on the resume. But you look at Tech's resume right now, and while there's certainly an uphill battle, Virginia Tech is 53rd in the net, right? So by definition, a bubble team. They are 3-0 in quad three games and 6-0 in quad four games. So in the nine games they've played against lower levels of competition on their schedule, they've won every single one of them. That's really good. That's important, right? Almost as important.
Especially when you're lacking those big wins.
When you're lacking the big wins. Because really, to this point, Ricky, Virginia Tech only has two big wins right now, and they were both really early in the season, both in non-conference schedule on neutral court, but they're both going to hold up as quad one wins. The Boise State game that they won in Orlando, and that Iowa State game that they won as well. Iowa State could easily win the Big 12. I know Kansas is there. Iowa State's really freaking good. Iowa State just beat Kansas 2 weekends ago now. Iowa State's got a really, really good team. And that's a gigantic win for Virginia Tech. That and the Boise State win, two really big wins. Virginia Tech right now is 2-2 in quad two games, right? So they haven't had a bunch of quad two opportunities. They do have some coming up on the schedule, though. So what's even more important than maybe securing, like, the big win down the stretch, right? You referenced going on the road to North Carolina. Virginia Tech also has to go on the road to Pittsburgh. That's looking like a quad one opportunity as well. But really, in my opinion, If you go 6-3 or 7-2 down the stretch, 6-3 I think would put you at 19 wins. 7-2 would put you at 20. There's a big difference between 19 and 20. I think 20 going into the ACC tournament, as long as one of those two losses isn't to, like, Notre Dame at home to end the year, which would be a quad four loss, or one of the handful of quad three games they have left, Notre Dame this Saturday on the road, Florida State at home, Louisville on the road. As long as it's not one of those games that you're losing, if you're losing to North Carolina or Pitt in quad one games, but you're winning the quad twos, you're winning all your quad three and quad fours, you end up at 20 wins, going to the ACC tournament, you actually feel decent about your resume. But you have to play perfect basketball down the stretch. And that's just going to be tough with this team, Ricky. Like, with the way things have been going, and we said this a couple years ago, with the way things have been going, I think Virginia Tech has an opportunity because I think the schedule presents itself pretty well, the mix of home and road games. But you got to play perfect basketball, and this is a team that doesn't have a margin for error really to do that.
No, they don't, and they haven't really had it all year. I wanted to look up Padula's specific minutes over the last, I guess, 10 games essentially, and since December 30, so really in 2024 so far, he has played 33 or more minutes in every single game. And when he's coming out, Hunter Couture is usually the one that's sliding into that point guard role, and that's just not going to be conducive for an offense to be able to create shots for people. You know, they this is just a roster construction issue, and unfortunately, I think we're going to see here down the stretch that winning these games is going to become more and more difficult, right? Because guys wear down over time, especially when they're playing 35 minutes a night. And unless we see, Mike, some of that Jaden Young or Rex Steiner or some of those guys take the load off and actually play productive minutes,
Yeah.
then I'm not sure this team just has the depth to be able to play in February and March. And
Yeah.
look, but we could all be wrong, right? That this team is one game away from getting super hot and just blowing somebody out, right?
That's
Because they
this. Yeah.
They are a pretty good jump shooting team, right? If we're just putting that into a silo, this is a pretty good jump shooting team. The problem is creating those shots. If they find a way to make those shots, they're going to beat most of the teams they play.
They're, because Ricky, the defense has been better this year. Like the defense
Yeah.
was atrocious last year, and I will give the coaching staff's taken a lot of flack, and I get it because of the depth issues and stuff. I understand. I'm not excusing that either, but they've improved the defense of this roster, Rick. Like Virginia Tech, you know, we could talk about the shot creators. All that is true, and what you just said, you hit the nail right on the head. They're playing defense well enough right now where if they just make some shots, they're going to win a lot of games because they have been defending at a high enough level, in my opinion, to keep themselves in almost every game they play. And the margin for error is thin offensively because it's really like a matter of making or missing your jump shots. They don't have enough guys who are able to go and get theirs. But I mean, if they start making some shots, I think they're defending right now, and they really have been for the entirety of the season. They're defending at a high enough level to not get themselves blown out of these games. And that's why all the wins and the losses, for the most part, have been real tight.
Yeah, I mean, look, if they don't, Miami went 22 of 23 from the free throw line in the second half. Like, that's ridiculous,
Yeah.
obviously.
Right.
You're not going to win very many games when the opposing team gets 22 from the line, just in the second half alone. But then again, that goes back to like Miami has that in their bag sometimes. Virginia Tech doesn't have that tool in the toolbox. So,
Miami's got multiple shot creators.
yeah, exactly. And while Tech's defense has improved and they do have the ability to shoot the ball well from deep, and Lynn Kidd can have the occasional game where he gets into double figures, they just don't have enough on offense to be able to provide consistent offense. And all it takes is one bad shooting night or one team getting hot that they're not going to be able to keep up. They don't have,
Duke. That was a Duke game.
yeah, I
That's
mean, they don't have an equalizing factor on their team, right? They're not an elite rebounding team. They're not incredibly efficient with the ball. They don't play this like slow ball control type offense, right? Like they don't have something that can kind of equalize the playing field regardless if a team has a really good night. I mean,
it's got to be your two highest usage players
yeah, right. Like, I mean,
carrying you, and that's
yeah,
tough. I mean, that's really,
if
really tough.
Padula and Couture don't combine for 35 points, right, they're not winning very many games.
Yeah, and the role guys, I think early on in the season especially, like I don't think the role players were really doing their part at all. A lot was on Couture and Padula. They were able to handle it, I think, for a good bit earlier in the season. And I do think I will give Virginia Tech's role players a lot of credit. Like MJ Collins kept Virginia Tech in the Duke game. Like he was good. He was good against Duke. He kept them in the game. Robbie Barron, I think, has been coming along, and he's been pretty solid defensively. He's been doing his part on the glass. He's been a very good passer, creating offense that way. Like, Barron's come along. But the consistency is the part of it. Like, that's the issue. That's the crux of it, Rick. Like, Padula's the only shot creator on this roster. He's it. He's it. Like, Kator is a catch-and-shoot three-point shooting marksman, right? If he's open from three, he's making 60% of those if he's wide open. Like, he's not going to miss if you're just leaving him open. Problem is, he's the worst-kept secret in the ACC. Like, everybody knows what kind of shooter he is, right? He's the most prolific three-point shooter in school history. He's circled on everybody's scouting report, as is Padula. And those are the two guys that you need to just carry you, and only one of them can create his own shot. That's the tough part. That's the crux of the issue.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech's getting crushed on the glass. Like, Duke is a team, like, Kyle Filipowski's very good, but Duke is not this imposing force from a rebounding standpoint. Virginia Tech got crushed on the glass in that game. Like, we talked
about,
they're
not also one of those elite teams. Like,
right.
Duke is,
yeah.
Duke hasn't shown to be that, like, top five, top seven Duke that we see, you know, most years. I would argue this is not, you know, I mean, they're not quite as down as they were a few years ago, but this is not like, this is certainly a gettable team, and Virginia Tech just doesn't have the necessary tools to be able to get them right now.
Right. Right. And I understand too, like, there's the thought, and I've seen this on social media, and I think it's true, right? The Virginia Tech, with the way they play offense, it's kind of the four around one, right? You have four shooters on the floor. You have the one big, you know, that's not necessarily conducive to rebounding. I get that to a degree, but, like, if you're going to play that kind of offense, your guards and your wings have to do their part on the glass. Like, it's part of what you're signing up for when you're playing that offense. Like, you have to have those guys crash the boards a little bit. I understand Virginia Tech's at a disadvantage when they're playing, like, Harrison Ingram and Armando Bacot, North Carolina. Like, I understand that. They're at a disadvantage, right? And maybe Virginia Tech should shake up the lineup a little bit when they're playing an opponent like that with two real dominant bigs. But there aren't a lot of teams on the schedule, and there aren't a lot of teams in the ACC that Virginia Tech plays where there's going to be one dominant big, let alone two. So for Virginia Tech to get crushed on the glass like they have is just really unacceptable. Like, the Miami game, too. Virginia Tech, I think, was minus 11 on the glass against Miami. Either minus 9 or minus 11, which, in a game where, you know, you're letting him make 21 second half free throws and, you know, you're turning the ball over the way they did late in that game. Because I thought Virginia Tech actually did a pretty good job taking care of the basketball for a majority of the game. That's why they were winning the game, right? The Duke game, Virginia Tech had four turnovers. Like, four, the entire game. Like, it's one of those things where, like, especially in the Duke game where we're talking about the four turnovers, like, the margin for error is so thin. So you can't get killed on the glass. You can't be minus 18, minus 19 on the glass. You can't be minus 11 on the glass and let your opponent shoot 21 free throws in the Miami game. Like, those are the things that start to add up when you have to play really, you're boxed in, I think is the word you used earlier. And I think that's a great way to describe it. You're boxed in terms of, like, how you're able to play and how you're able to beat your opponent. And I think that Tech's kind of between a rock and a hard place a little bit, because one night you could have Lynn Kidd have a really good night, right? Where, like, the opponent that Tech's playing doesn't have a big that can stay in front of Lynn Kidd if he's catching the ball 5 feet from the basket, right? He's just going to shoot
we
over.
We saw that all in non-com play, right?
Right.
We were all kind of fooled by the lesser level of competition, and Kidd just kind of had a field day,
right?
Against
and
those
he's,
guys.
He's athletic. He's
yeah.
definitely athletic. The problem is that he's tall and lanky, right? So if you get a guy like a Baycott, like, we'll find out against Carolina, but you get a guy like Baycott on him, I feel like that's just not a good matchup for Lynn Kidd, right? Could Lynn Kidd shoot over Baycott? Yeah, but Baycott's gonna challenge that shot, and he's a lot bigger than Lynn Kidd is. It's just gonna be tough. So there's just not a lot of favorable matchups you get from a big perspective. And then everybody's circling Hunter Kotor and Sean Padula on the scouting report, and Padula is the only guy who can break down his guy off the dribble. He's it.
Yeah.
Everybody's screaming about his turnovers, but he's it. Like, people need to realize how much is on him. If he doesn't
much,
do it, they're not going to score. Like,
it's
he,
very much reminiscent of, I think it was 2013, Devin Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yep.
And like there are some differences, right? Because Devin was very much out of his element in that role.
Yeah.
Sean is in his element right now, even though maybe not to this degree.
Right.
But Devin Wilson was like his usage rate was like 107%, right? It was absurd. I mean, he was, you know, your volume shooter award every week for the BC podcast. And in some ways, Padula he's not shooting it, you know, a crazy amount. He's shooting it more than I think he probably needs to. But again, it goes back to if other guys aren't able to slash and get the ball into the paint and then get the defense to collapse, it all does rely on Sean. And with a usage rate that high, and, you know, Sean is a good, but he's not an elite player. So he really is being asked to play like a prime Russell Westbrook.
He's not that guy.
And that's okay to not be that guy, right? Most people aren't that guy. Sean is a good point guard.
He's good. Yeah, he's a good player. But
he's being asked to be an elite point guard.
And he's being asked to be RJ Davis at Carolina.
And he just isn't.
He's just not, right.
And that's okay. Like, that's not a knock on him. That's a knock on the guys around him aren't suitable enough to support what he's being asked to do.
Padula is one of the top point guards in the ACC. He's a power conference level point guard, and he's good. And yes, if he enters the transfer portal, a lot of big time programs would love
to start. He will start at a good program somewhere.
He's from Oklahoma. If Porter Moser called him up, if he entered the portal and Porter Moser called him up tomorrow, he'd be the starting point guard at Oklahoma next year. Like, he is a very, very good player, but we're talking like
he's not Allen Iverson.
You're asking him at his usage rate to be an All-American type player, and he's not that. And that's not a knock on Sean Padula. He is a very, very good player, but you're asking him to be playing at an All-American type level because Virginia Tech has literally nobody else to take the load off of him in terms of creating their own shot. And that's really, really tough for a kid like Padula, who he was one of Mike Young's like prized recruits, right? He was one of those guys who was supposed to come in and make an impact, and he has certainly done that. But he is in this role right now where he's got to do everything, and he's just one guy, Rick. That's the bottom line. However you look at Sean Padula, if you think he's as good as we think he is, or if you think he's just like, you know, he is the 7 turnover guy and that's just who he is, if that's how you feel about him, that's fine. But regardless, this team would be absolutely nowhere near where they're at right now without him. So you just really got to be careful. You just really got to be careful what you wish for, right?
Yeah, and absolutely.
The Tech is just not in a spot where they can afford to lose this guy. Flat out. You think the margin for error is small now. If he's not on this roster, this is a whole I don't know what kind of team this is. I mean, not good. It would not be good. The young guys would have to really take a step forward quickly, and they'd be playing in huge roles. That would pay dividends later, I guess. But you don't want to be in that position. And I don't know, man. I understand the fan frustration, but I think the discourse on social media after that Miami game, I understand it was a really frustrating loss. And I was, you know, I'm watching that game slip away, and I'm seeing Padula turn the ball over, and it's really frustrating. But also, like, taking a step back and realizing that this team kind of would be nowhere near the team that they are without him is something that I think fans really need to consider. And I think it's easy to talk about this on Monday night, like 48 hours removed from the game, right? And I think fans have probably calmed down a little bit and look at this and say, yeah, this kid is really freaking important to what Mike Young wants to do, right? Like, he is vital to this team. He is this team. Like, he is the offense. So I think fans probably acknowledge that, but I just saw some wild stuff out there the other day, and I just wanted to make sure I addressed that.
Virginia Tech has 3 games in 7 days, starting on the 10th. They've got their road trip to South Bend. They've got a home trip with Florida State. Feels like Virginia Tech's got to win both of these games, correct?
Yeah, I mean, these are, I think a good way to look at this is to break down the remaining nine games. This is kind of like an easy exercise, but actually it falls out that way when looking at like where these teams are from a quadrant one, two, three, and four standpoint, to look at them kind of in three game increments, right? So I think at minimum, Ricky, I think at minimum I think there's two scenarios, okay? From a tournament bubble standpoint, I think there's two scenarios, at least in the regular season schedule, right? You can go 6-3, but then you'd have a ton of work to do in the ACC tournament. Or you can go 7-2, and assuming that you're not dropping a quad four game against Notre Dame to end the year, for example, or like losing on the road at Louisville, a bad Louisville team, as long as that's not one of your two losses, I think you go into ACC tournament feeling like you're in decent shape, like you're probably one of the last teams in the field, and like you win a game or two in the ACC tournament, you're probably in. I think those are like the two scenarios, okay? So let's look at these next nine games in three-game increments. So you just mentioned the Notre Dame game on the road, Florida State at home, and then they go on the road to Carolina on February 17th. So in the next 12 days, they have three games. Got to win those first two to answer your question. Need to. Those are both quad three games on the road at Notre Dame, home against Florida State. Virginia Tech lost a real tough one to Florida State. I think it was third game of the conference schedule. Lost a tough one to the Seminoles, a game they easily could have won. Very, very tough loss. That's a game you absolutely have to win. Notre Dame is even more important from the standpoint of you cannot lose that. Like that's a can't lose game. Notre Dame is 168th in the net. They are in a first-year coaching situation with Micah Shrewsbury, very good coach, coming over from Penn State. He's got some work to do. They cannot lose this game in South Bend on Saturday night.
Grandmother's Notre Dame.
Cannot. This is not back-to-back Elite Eight Mike Bray teams. You cannot lose to Notre Dame in South Bend on Saturday. Cannot do it. If you lose either one of these next few games or both, kiss any semblance of the NCAA tournament goodbye unless you win the ACC title. You have to win these next two. So,
yeah. Yeah. And then, I mean, I feel like the UVA game is really important, especially if your UNC game is in trouble, right? Because we're not really expecting them to perform all that well against North Carolina, but if you beat UVA at home, that's a bit of a help. Yeah.
A quad two game, right? So that would be a very good win, right? And you know, Virginia Tech didn't shoot it well against Virginia the first time they played him in Charlottesville. Virginia Tech historically, like the last 5 or 6 years, just has not played very well in Charlottesville. Did not shoot it very well. Played well enough defensively to keep them in it and got it inside 5 points multiple times in the second half. UVA eventually just pulled away. Virginia's hot right now. I think they're going for their they've won six straight, I believe. They're hot. Like they're starting to peak at the right time. Right now that's a quad two game. Could potentially be a quad one game 2.5 weeks from now. Yeah, I think it's probably just going to be a high level quad two game. I think if you beat UVA, that's a huge feather in your cap from a tournament standpoint. Right after that, you go on the road 5 days later at Pitt, which right now is looking like a quad one opportunity. And Pitt's good, but Pitt's beatable.
Yep.
At their place is tough. Like Virginia Tech historically, I mean, we talk about it in football all the time, Virginia Tech going to Heinz Field and like laying an egg. It's like the running joke. It's tough to go play Pitt on the road. It's a weird arena.
It's even tougher to go the next game against Syracuse on the road. I mean, I know Syracuse is
not very good, but that's always kind of a weird place to play.
Yeah, another year one coaching situation. But a team that I think is very evenly matched with you, right? So you talk about that first three-game stretch, Notre Dame, Florida State, North Carolina. I think you go 2-1 there. Assuming they're going to lose to Carolina, who looked phenomenal against Duke this weekend. Carolina's like Final Four good.
Yeah, they're going to be there.
They're good.
They're going to be right in that conversation.
RJ Davis is an All-American. Baycott and Ingram underneath. Yeah, no thank you. They're damn good. But this next three-game stretch, Virginia, Pitt, and Syracuse, so you get the UVA game at home, Pitt and Syracuse on the road. Again, like, if you go 3-0 in that stretch, right, the most likely path to 7-2, I think, is going 2-1, 2-1, and then finishing the year 3-0, which is home against Wake, at Louisville, home against Notre Dame. Wake Forest, quad two game. Louisville on the road, quad three. Notre Dame, quad four. So the reality of the situation, Ricky, is you cannot lose the following games, okay? In whatever situation you play out, whether it's 6-3, 7-2, if it's worse, they're not going to a tournament unless they win, get hot, right? In the tournament, the ACC tournament, they're not going to the big dance unless they go at least 6-3, maybe 7-2. But regardless of what scenario you play out there, you cannot lose the following games. You ready? At Notre Dame, home against Florida State. At Louisville, home against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Two against ND, on the road against Louisville, home against Florida State. You cannot lose those four games. Any of them, really. If you lose one of them, you got to then pick off North Carolina. You got to go perfect against Virginia, Pitt, and Syracuse. That's kind of what you need to do if you drop one of those games. I think the path is kind of going 2-1 in each, getting to 6-3. This is the most realistic path, in my opinion, just with the roster construction, depth of the team, understanding what we've seen so far, right? All the data points we have on this team so far. I think the most realistic scenario at this point for Virginia Tech to make the NCAA tournament is to go 6-3 in the final nine games, right? Go 2-1 in each three game stretch, which I think is doable. And then get to the ACC tournament and try to get to a quarterfinal or a semifinal and then see if that's enough on Selection Sunday. I think that's the most realistic scenario. If you get to 7-2 and those two losses are not against the two Notre Dame games, the Louisville game, the Florida State game, I think you're feeling pretty good going to the ACC tournament as long as you don't lay an egg in your first game.
Yeah.
That's the path. I think the 6-3 one is more likely.
And even that might not be enough, right?
Like, no. And that's 19 wins. And you just look at the history of the NCAA tournament, you're a lot more likely to get in. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but you're a lot more likely to get in the NCAA tournament. Things like 65 or 70% of the time, if you get to 20 wins. And then if you get to 19, it's like 35% of the time. So, I mean, it's a steep drop off, right? So yeah. 6-3 probably might not even do it, to your point.
So let's wrap this up by give me your percent chance as of right now that Tech makes the NCAA tournament.
Okay, so like teamrankings.com, which is like it's a data and analytics site, tracks like a bunch of different college basketball stats, you know, strength of schedule, all that stuff, RPI, KenPom, all that stuff, all the old stuff, the net, everything, has Virginia Tech at a 48% chance to make the NCAA tournament. 48%, Rick. Basically 50-50.
A bit higher than I would have guessed.
Yeah, bit higher than I would have guessed too. And then you take a step back, you see they're 53rd in the net, they have two really good wins against Boise State and Iowa State, and you see that they have no bad losses. I think that's the most important thing, right? I think the reason why it's so high is they have not lost a bad game yet.
Yeah.
Almost as important as not having a lot of quality wins is really just not having a lot of bad losses. Like, that's the... I think I would give this team less than 50%. I'd say probably like around a 40% chance to make the tournament, I think would be pretty fair, just given the schedule, I think is workable. The home and away games, I think, are definitely workable. I think Tech is better than several of these teams. You know, yeah, even with what we've seen, you know, it's a flawed team. We know that. We talked about that for his podcast, right? But I think just on paper, Tech's better than a number of these teams they're playing in the month of February. They're better than a bunch of them on paper. Games aren't played on paper. But
got that right.
But Tech's better than a bunch of these teams, I think. I think Tech's good enough to win six of these games and to have a chance to be in the conversation, right? Like, I think they're good enough even kind of with their flaws to win six of these final nine. So just show me which ones are the six. Show me which games you're losing. Yeah. If it's going to be 6-3, tell me which ones you're losing. That's the first question I'm going to ask. Well, who are you losing to?
Yeah, I guess for me, I'm in the same ballpark. I was going to do 35%. I think that there's still a reasonable path for them to get there, but I don't think it's likely.
Yeah, I agree.
But stranger things have happened. I mean, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I think there's opportunity. I think, you know, as frustrating as Saturday against Miami was, it wasn't like a situation where the team just, that was it. Like, yeah. Pack it up. It was a really tough loss. It was one that you'd love to have, right? You know, it would have made Tech's life a lot easier down the stretch to have that feather in their cap already and not have to be kind of, I mean, 6-3 and 7-2 is not perfect, but I think for this team it's pretty damn close to perfect, like dropping a game or two here and there and just being really, really good. It would have been nice to have that feather in your cap, but like all hope is not lost, but it's an uphill battle. And
yeah, for sure.
And I think what really is buoying Tech right now is they don't have any bad losses. And I think if you keep up that trend, right, if you're able to get to 19 or 20 wins with no real bad losses and you get to the ACC tournament, win a couple, I think you're going to have a strong case. But if you're left out on Selection Sunday, you're going to be pointing to the last 4 minutes of the Miami game.
Yeah.
Like you're going to be pointing to.
Yeah. And you always want your resume to come down to who you beat, not who you either did or did not lose to, right?
Yep.
So Virginia Tech needs to do themselves some favors. Either find a way to win the Carolina game, or I think you've got to go 2-0 against Pitt and Virginia.
Yeah.
If you go 2-0 against Pitt and Virginia, you're starting to feel like, okay, that's two quality wins. We're feeling pretty good about the way this team's going. We've handled lesser competition thus far. I feel a lot better if they can go 2-0 in those two games, because I'm honestly just kind of writing Carolina off at this time.
I don't know how you couldn't with the way they look. Yeah,
we'll see what happens, right? But I'm kind of writing that one off. So for me, Pitt, UVA, extremely important, and then obviously that Syracuse game kind of falls right into there. So we'll have to see how it goes. The season's certainly not over, but the Miami game is going to potentially come back and haunt them.
Yeah. Yeah. That in the last 5 or 6 minutes of the first Florida State game are the two, and it was early in conference play, so you're trying to put too much weight on it. But at the end of the game, at the end of the year, all games are weighted the same. Yeah. Like when you play them, doesn't really matter. It's like,
yep.
Yeah. So, I agree. And the Carolina game, I think the only way the Hokies are competitive there is like they have to hit 12 or 13 threes. Like, see, I'm dead serious. It's just a bad matchup. It is.
Well, I mean, in most teams, for it would be a bad matchup, but
right.
Certainly
right.
For the Hokies.
Yeah, they're just real good in the front court and All-American guard play, and you're on the road, and the stars have to align. You just have to hit a million threes.
Yeah.
So, not saying it can't happen, but that would be tough. All right, Rick.
You got anything else?
I'm good. We'll come back and record here soon. We've been doing a pretty good job at recording probably every week and a half, 2 weeks. So I think that we feel pretty good about that in the offseason so far. So we're doing a decent job with that. We haven't had a ton of football news of late.
At least not Virginia Tech related.
Not Virginia Tech related. Yeah, not Virginia Tech related. Pitt just lost their defensive line coach today to the NFL, and that's going to be a really big loss for Narduzzi. Charlie Partridge. The only reason I bring that up is because Nick Saban was trying to pry him off of Pitt staff like multiple times over the last 5 years. So that gives you an idea of what kind of coach he is.
Yeah, and at some point this offseason, I do want to bring up the Halfley stuff and
sorry,
take kind of a 6,000-foot view of that, right? And kind of just address the landscape in general, because I do think you're going to see more of that moving forward as college football becomes less and less like the college football that these guys signed up for.
Yeah, 1,000% with you. So yeah, we'll get back and talk about that. We have a guest in the works that we're excited about. Spring football just around the corner already. I mean,
it's hard to believe.
It's hard to believe that's just kind of how this works.
A little over 2 months.
Yeah. So spring football, and then you all know how this works. We get through spring football. We all take like a breather for about a month or two. And then all of a sudden, like, fall camp's around the corner.
Yeah.
So it'll be here before you know it. And Virginia Tech, I mean, I did see this today, Bill Connolly's SP Plus. Virginia Tech is first in the country in returning production for 2024, which we knew they were returning everybody, and we knew the majority of who they were returning was important. But I wasn't anticipating. I thought they'd be in, like, the top 20, but I didn't think they'd be first in the country in returning production. So expectations
that do not suck.
things that do not suck. That, and a lot of stuff has sucked in the last, you know, decade for football. So this is good.
Yeah,
good
for sure.
We'll be back. Andrew will be back with us. Give us a follow on social media. Twitter at Hokie Hangover, Ricky at Ricky LeBlue, me at Mike Daniel SI for now. Haha. At Andrew Alex Radio. It's a fun time. At Andrew Alex Radio. And yeah, we'll be back soon. Probably talk about basketball and any big football things that happen. Anything else, Rick?
I ain't got it. Rate, review, subscribe. We'll see y'all next time. And as always, go Hokies.